Good evening. Great to see everybody tonight, to be back together on Sunday evening to worship together and to today to look back over some things we were talking about a little bit earlier today to try to just kind of take that the next step and get some application. And I'll be looking to you for help, for advice to give to one another as we talk about finding balance in our life. But first, Summer 2012, it's time for the Summer Games. You ready for the Olympics? It's been a long time, 4 years since the... I love the Summer, I like the Olympics. It's there's parts of it, you know, that get a little overdone and the maybe a little of the commercialization of it all, but the sport act, the sport side of it is pretty amazing. And the Summer Olympics are coming up, so I wonder, what's your favorite event or type of event in the Summer Games? Favorite event or type, you know, like type of event, because there's a lot of categories. Track and field. Any particular thing? Just enjoy the track and field events. Okay. You like swimming? Okay. We've got we did pretty well last time in the swimming in 2008. Somebody else favorite? Jared. Okay, the 100, 200, fastest man alive, 100 yard, or the 100 meters, sorry. Got to get the right measurement. Eric, you say synchronized swimming? Is that what you said, Eric? Okay, I thought so. Teach you to raise your hand, huh? I like those gymnastics where they wave the little flag. What is that? I don't know, that is the strangest thing. I don't even know what that's called, but if that's your favorite, I'm really sorry. The gymnastics are pretty amazing. Anybody have a favorite gymnastics event? Boy, nobody's going to answer now. Yes, sir, Jim? You like the rings? Amazing strength. You know, when they do that like iron cross thing and put their arms out, it's just absolutely amazing. Yeah. Quiet group tonight. I was going to say, which gymnastic event would you least like to attempt? Let me just answer first of all by saying all of them. there's no way I could even begin to do any of them, but there is one that I have the greatest. Is there one that you would just like, that is not, you're not going to try that? Balance beam for you, Earl? That's me too. It's the best. Jim? The horse? Okay. Boxing? We'll have to explain the gymnastics events, but sorry, Gerald. You know, I wouldn't have laughed if anybody else would have done that, but you get me all the time. So yeah, the balance beam, you know, I watched those people up on that balance beam. I couldn't walk across the balance beam. I mean, there's no way I could walk. I would fall off. I couldn't do it. And then you see them do those standing back flips, and you think, how in the world do you, I mean, that just no way I would even attempt that. As a kid and as an adult, I don't have very good balance, you know. Learning to ride a bike, I was a little, I have to admit, took me a while. But like ice skating, roller skating, ankles, man, they would fold under me, roll under me. And even, you know, my old scooter, it was before skateboards. I had the, you know, your dad makes you a scooter. My dad was a carpenter, so he was real good at that. Made me a scooter with those little metal wheels on it, you know, and got lots of scrapes riding my scooter around the neighborhood, especially on the wide cracks in the cement would kind of knock you off. But balance is just not something I've done. I just don't have it. I just don't have balance like that. And so the balance beam obviously is something that I wouldn't care to attempt. This morning we talked about balance in our life, the spiritual balance especially, but just started out talking about all of the things that we have to balance in our life. And tonight there's a range of ages here. Some folks who have lived through several decades of life who've got a lot of experience in this, and maybe you can look back with mistakes and successes that you've had, some that are younger and beginning to have more balls thrown up in the air for them to juggle along the way as their families grow and so forth. When it comes to your life, what are the concerns, the responsibilities, and the just the competing needs, demands, and expectations that you have to somehow keep going in your life? What are some of the things that you find, in a sense, competing for your time and energies? Anybody want to throw something out there? Okay, so you have kind of everything laid out, and then something comes in, maybe unexpected, that you end up having to give attention to, and it kind of throws everything else off, and then, yeah, it's a matter of trying to reschedule or get it all, get everything going back in the air. Yeah. How about some of you who have kids at home? Have any difficulty juggling life, juggling responsibilities? I'll put words in your mouth if you don't raise your hand. So you might as well help me out here. Is there? Okay, so balancing just with raising your son, making sure he has the attention, the discipline, the training that he needs. Yeah, that's definitely a very important responsibility. Eric? Okay, maybe I think probably a lot of us can identify with what Eric said, that sometimes you can, when it comes to speaking as men here, you have a wife, the children, the work responsibilities, the things that you're involved in church and in ministry. Eric's saying sometimes, you know, you can be going through the motions and make sure you kind of cover your bases, but at times in your heart, you're not really giving the kind of focus and attention to that person or to that individual. It could be your child or your wife, or your husband, or even the ministry that you're involved in, where you kind of cover your bases and you show up for all the appointments. You come home at night, you know, you do those things. But you, the other aspect of that is supplying emotionally and relationally what people need in those, you know, in your family and in your church relationships as well. It's difficult. I think we all, you know, every time we talk about time, we always get to the point where we talk about just how hectic life is, and it just seems to be that way. I talk to people who are retired, and they talk about, I don't know how I got anything done when I was working, because they find that even in their retirement, there are activities that they're getting involved in, and maybe ministry increasing that still tends to dominate a lot of their time, and those problems continue to come. When we're dealing with all of those interests, and you know, all of them have demands and can be very demanding. And I think, especially with work today, with the way the situation is with work, being employed, the unemployment, all of that sort of thing, it's very easy for people to find a great level of demand placed on them at times by their employers, and sometimes kind of over the top on that. But as we think about all of those things that we do have to deal with and balance in our life, what's the difference between the urgent and the important when it comes to those kinds of things? And what do you ever find yourself kind of facing that dilemma between giving attention to the urgent versus the important? Anybody have a thought on that? Kind of the urgent versus the important. Lou?
Mm-hmm. You have to make a fast retort.
That's mm-hmm. the only way you can do it.
Sure.
And yet you ask yourself, well, is there another way? But there isn't. It's like watching them do something or touch something or try to taste something that's dangerous.
You sure. Yeah, that requires urgency, certainly.
Later on, you will explain what you
sure. Do. Yeah, in that case, urgency is an essential just for the safety of the child. A lot of time in our lives, the urgent things come up in a sense like that demand our attention immediately, but they can crowd out the things that really are vital or important in our life. Things like cars breaking down on the way to work. Guess what you're going to do today? You're going to get the car fixed. You got to get the car fixed. It's urgent. And we all have these experiences, and sometimes they kind of pile up on us, where there are a lot of urgent things that come up that you just have to deal with. You've got to take care of it. You almost feel like there's not a choice sometimes. And oftentimes, when you get enough of those kind of lined up in a row, it's kind of like what Eric was talking about, where you begin then to start dropping off on those things that are important. It's really strange, and I'm sure we've all experienced this, that there's something about the important things that so often the most important things in our lives do not make those same urgent demands. The most important thing in our life is our relationship with God. And then after that, our relationships in our families and the church, that's where, you know, we're life centers. And God just isn't always, you know, getting after us and making urgent that sense of spending time with Him. And sometimes in our relationships and our families, it's amazing how it's almost easier to put off the important things to handle the urgent. And there may be occasions, of course, where that has to happen in the short term. But it's all in all, it's not a good way. Not a good way to live, that's for sure. And sometimes when we get caught up in that kind of life, we end up looking back over a day or over a week or over a month, and we find that some very vital things in our life have been missed. Jared? Okay. That's right. Mary and Martha, a great example where Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet. Martha is busy in the housework, wanting to be hospitable, wanting to do the right thing, and yet missing out on something that's very important. And I know I've shared this with you before, because it was one of those moments that just got me. We were living in Petaluma. And I remember coming home one night and looking in on the kids. Katie and John were asleep, and it dawned on me that I hadn't seen them awake for like 4 days because I was so busy at church. I'll never forget that. You know, I mean, that was it just dawned on me. This was like on a Thursday or something. I thought, I haven't seen my kids awake since Monday morning. What's going on here? This isn't right. There's something wrong with what I'm doing here. This is not right. And let me just say, it was self-inflicted. No one was setting me up for that. No one was making me do that. I might have had a little trouble with expectations. And can you believe I used to be a people pleaser? Can you believe that? I would just say, yes, yes, yes. I don't have that reputation anymore, but I do see my kids. But I just remember that night. And I don't mean that everything changed for the better there, and I always had my little ducks lined up properly after that. But that was just one of those moments in life where I thought, this is not right. This is not being a good Christian man. Yeah, I'm really involved, and I got lots of irons in the fire, and I'm helping a lot of folks, but I haven't talked to my kids. And I realized then, at least initially, how important it was to really be more thoughtful about scheduling, about family, about all of the things that encompass our lives as Christians. And I mean, the reason cliches are cliches is because they're so often true. You know, you've heard of the preacher who's lost all of his kids, you know, whose children are not faithful to the Lord, and yet he's been busy after other people's kids, perhaps, or other people, and not himself. And that's a cliche because I think sometimes it happens. I'm sure there are several here who've probably struggled with that same kind of thing. No doubt those who've served as elders through the years have been having to make those kinds of adjustments and so forth too. But I'd like to just ask you to share advice, what you have learned, with someone who is having difficulty in determining the best use of their time. If you had, and we're talking here from a Christian viewpoint, we're not talking about time management or business, but from a Christian viewpoint, if you had to come up with the most important principles for how to determine the way you spend your time, the way you make those kinds of decisions, what are some principles that you would share with a fellow believer? How do you make those kinds of decisions? What are the principles involved, Rick? Okay, that's a good one. Is it going to make a difference 100 years from now? That kind of cuts through it, doesn't it? How many things are going to make a difference 100 years from now? And that helps you define what's important. That's an excellent principle. Tim? Okay. Okay. Tim, kind of adding to what Rick says, takes us to Ecclesiastes. All is vanity, and the conclusion of the matter in Ecclesiastes 12:13 is to fear God and keep his commandments. And that gets us to the priority, and I think you know what Rick is talking about as well. It gets to that one of those basic priorities about our life is that these kinds of decisions in our life, in a real practical sense, need to be based on the perspective of God and what truly is important. Roxanne? It'll be there when you get to it. When it comes to things that aren't completely essential or things, yeah, it's true, and it is, isn't it? It does, unless you get real lucky and it goes away, but typically it's there when you go back to it and you end up having the time to accomplish the task. Proper prioritizing, and
you're going to spend the time somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
24 hours in a day.
Yep.
But where you're going to spend it, where you properly prioritize. Christian has to properly prioritize because everything's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as Rod says, everything's important, so a Christian has to prioritize because you're going to spend the time, and you have to determine the best way to where you're going to put your energies and your attention.
A great example of urgency and importance, cell phone, people feel are urgent. They're not.
Well, they may be urgent. I'm not sure how important they are. I don't know.
Waste of time.
If you want to get a message through to Rod, text him because he'll never see it. So text him. That's what he tells me. Just text me. When he's trying to kind of push me off to the side, just text me. Yeah. Yeah, he's busy doing important things, probably 49ers or something. But I saw a hand while just before Rod. Tim, maybe there. If someone else, put your hand up just a bit higher. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and in the prioritizing, as Tim says, God has to be at the top. God's perspective. And this morning when we were talking, oh, go ahead, Judith.
Well,
Sure, and still in your example, God is still at the top, because it's what you're doing is directed by God. You know, as something that he's given you the responsibility to do. So yeah, to say God is at the top doesn't mean we're always just sitting and being still and thinking of him, but that we recognize his priorities, his perspective, his teaching about, you know, our life situation and the best use of that time. Yes. Okay. That's a good one. That's certainly true. Yeah, to begin that at home. When Elle and I were talking about this, I guess Thursday or Friday, I'm not sure. I was saying, I need a title for Sunday morning. I couldn't come up. My brain just is kind of flaking out on me the last week or so here. And so we were just talking, and she just made the comment. She said, well, you know, if you're too busy, you're too busy. And I said, what? I mean, that was just like, I'm not sure that makes any sense. Let me think about that for a minute. And so then I texted Deanne and said, PM sermon title, if you're too busy, you're too busy. And that's a principle that I think is important. If you're too busy, then you really are too busy. And there's only one thing to do. And that is to stop something, is to say no to something, is to have the willingness to uncommit yourself from something. If you sense that you really are too busy to do what God calls you to do or to get your priorities right. And I think that's probably one of the most difficult things now. I'm guessing, I'm not raising kids, but just from conversations I have and watching people raise kids, I think one of the difficult things to do is to say no to things, to say no to activities, because there's so much that can be done. There, and when a child commits to something now, whether it's in sports or music or school or whatever, you know, you can get to a point where your life is just spent running from one thing to another, and the sense of quality time for a child, their spiritual training, their time in church fellowship can just get swept away. And it's like Rick said, and it sounds a little cold, probably would really sound cold to a teenager to say this to them, but what's it going to matter in 100 years? Not that we want our kids not to have any kind of extracurricular activities, but just to say, in 100 years, the most important thing is that you're living in the presence of God and that you have eternal life. And that's what the attention. And it's not just true for kids, but it's also true for all of us that... it's so easy to get swept up in the expectations of the world and how we should spend our time and what's important for us to accomplish. And so often, that's just not the case. And I may explore this a little bit next week, but let me just ask you a question. Can you think of a time in the Gospels that Jesus was frantic? Where he was frantic, where he was just kind of running around like, oh, how in the world am I going to get all of this done? Yeah, he was angry, but in the sense of being frantic. If you've ever been accused, like I have, of running around like a chicken with its head cut off, that's sort of frantic, you know, when you're just trying to get so much done all at once. And I look at Jesus and how packed his life was, how filled it is with activity. But do you ever get the sense Jesus was running off in a hurry? I mean, do you ever see him running because he's 15 minutes late? You know, I know this is, you know, the gospel writers aren't going to say that he was 10 minutes late to Mary and Martha, so he, you know, he jogged the last way or something. But when you read the life of Jesus, you just sense that he is quite at peace with the amount of time that he has and in the way he's determined to spend it. And a lot of that gets down to when to say yes and when to say no. We may explore this a bit next week, so I'm gonna let it go. But Jesus knew how to tell people no when they had expectations of what he ought to do. And there were times when he said yes. And he had that priority system of making decisions about what he should do. And he didn't allow, and this is, I think, something very important, he didn't allow people's expectations to determine what he did or his his schedule, but rather God's expectation of what the Lord wanted him to do, not what everybody else thought he ought to be doing on Tuesday afternoon, but on God's plan and how he could respond to that. Gerald and then Brian. That's why I'm glad that you got the boxing thing mixed up, Gerald, just for things like that. I think you read the Old Testament through pretty good. I think you probably knew that one pretty good. But well, you don't think he had, what's that? I have a feeling he's, well, we'll have to talk. I think he probably did study as a child and was taught, but we'll deal with that some other time. Brian? Sure, with the death of Lazarus, waiting for the 4 days before he goes. Yeah. Jesus just seemed to have perfect timing. And that's something we struggle with, is a sense of timing. And we talked about this morning how he had this sense, this balance in his life. And I really, I don't think we're making too much of this in coming back to the passage that we Michael read today, and then we read it a couple of times in the lesson from Luke 21. Each day Jesus was teaching at the temple, and each evening he went out to spend the night on the hill called the Mount of Olives, and all the people came early in the morning to hear him at the temple. We just have that flow, that ebb and flow in his life of time with the Father, time with people. And this is, you know, this appears to me to be a very noticeable pattern in the Gospels. We read from about 6 or 7 different chapters in Luke this morning, and we see this pattern over and over again. I think it's a key for all of us, because you have the time of solitude, and in that solitude, we're reminded of who we are. We have the time to focus. We're reminded of what our priorities in life are. We get our heads on straight, spiritually speaking, and then we're ready to go, and we have strength and power and direction to do the service that we need to be doing. Which are you most likely to struggle with? Finding times for solitude or finding times for service? Are you more inclined to have trouble with one of those rather than the other? Jared? Solitude. How many would say between solitude, between finding time to be doing something actively and finding times of solitude to be with the Father alone, how many, just rather than have everybody answer, how many would say you would have more difficulty typically with solitude? Okay, fair number of hands. Why is that the case for those of us who have raised our hands? Mike? Oh, excellent point. Yeah, those other events come and go. You're going to be at work in the morning. You're going to, yeah. That's an excellent point, that the solitude is complete. It's up to us. Nobody puts that on our schedule. That's an excellent point. And that's that may be one of the reasons it's easier for us to put it off, because no one is putting it on our schedule. No one else is holding us accountable for that time. And so it's easier to push that aside to deal with the things that come up. That's a very excellent point. Eric? Yes, that's so true. Service, activity, doing something is quantitative. You can see it, you can count it, you can measure it, and it looks and feels and is productive. Where solitude is very productive and essential, but it's not quantified. It's not like, okay, I spent 15 minutes, I've got, you know, kind of this much in my tank for that. It's not the same kind of event. And a lot of times, I think one of the reasons, I think this may be true for men generally. I don't want to speak for the sisters here, but I think a lot of times for men, we're just kind of geared that of how what our productivity should look like. If we're doing something, I mean, we're so often tied into what we do, to the work that we do, to what we accomplish, and we're known by our work and those sorts of things, and maybe just by virtue of working, and that we kind of have that bent. I don't know if women have that same thing or not. I can't speak to that, but I think sometimes as men, it's like, oh, I could go do this. I can go do this and it's going to make a difference, or I can just sit over here and pray. And at times we don't recognize the value and the importance and the essentiality of that solitude. What happens in your life when you miss the solitude? What are the effects? Anxious and stressed out. I think that's exactly true. Ellen? Yes, you do lose that sense of power. And this morning we read from Luke 4, Luke 5, Luke 6, Luke 9, Luke 21, Luke 23. And in about three of those passages, if you were with us this morning, you may remember that it speaks about power. That after Jesus did this, the power was present for him to heal. People came and touched him because power was coming out of him. There is a relationship in the life of Jesus between spiritual power. I'm not saying between his divinity, between his deity, between God and the flesh. That's a constant. But there is a connection. We read it in Luke 4. He was led by the Spirit. He was filled with the Spirit in the wilderness. And then he comes out to Galilee in power. There's a correlation between those things. And burnout. People talk about burnout. One of the chief causes of spiritual burnout in the church is a lack of solitude, a lack of time with God, where we find ourselves replenished, where we have that strengthening. Mylon? Yes, yeah, it really begins to impact our relationship with God. Mylon says not having quite that same close feeling, that intimacy with God that comes from times of prayer and meditation and just times of reflection. Jared says prioritization gets out of whack when he hasn't spent the time with God, and that's because that's that centering activity. And again and again, we see it in Jesus. And without that time of solitude, we can just lose a sense of power. You can lose your joy. You become discouraged. You can become grumpy. And the problem then is, how do I carve out ample time? I'm going to close in about 3 minutes, but I want these last 3 minutes some practical suggestions. What are some ways that you find that you can carve out time, even if it's only 15 minutes? Now, there are times when you can carve out a whole day, when you can just say, I'm going away today, taking one of your days off and just doing something. But on a more regular basis, what are some things that you find are helpful for carving out some time? Brian? Making it the same time every day? Okay, how many people have, I'm not going to ask for any explanation, but how many of you have a certain time every day you at least attempt? I mean, in your mind, it's you're going to attempt to have some time with God in a particular time. Okay, quite a few people, maybe almost half, kind of where you have a focal point where you try. That's something very good to do. Alan? Okay. Okay, a specific place. That's good. Yeah, my place tends to change. My time is a little bit more constant, but there are places. There are some places that are close by that are special. Tim? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, as Tim says, get up a few minutes earlier. Of course, that's for some of you that'd be pretty early. So, but I know what you mean. The morning always works better for me. But because of the way the days go, because of the way things pile up on you as the day goes through, to have some time before you're interacting with other people, to have your time with God is very good if you can. Sometimes that's difficult in certain households, but that can really be a blessing to have that time every day. You know, lunchtime. If you take, I imagine most of us eat lunch fast one day, and just if you're at work, just go out to the car, go find a quiet place, or go take a walk, or have something quick, and then just go off and be by yourself during lunchtime. Just take a 15-minute walk after dinner, and just reflect and pray as you're walking. Just, you know, even if you're going with someone else, a husband and wife taking a walk together, an individual, but just being quiet and taking a walk. Do any of you ever watch television? Maybe. You know, isn't it amazing how the hours can pile up on us, even those of us who probably don't think we watch all that much. I mean, we're so far below the national average, we don't think we watch that much TV. But, you know, you just think, I really need this next 30 minutes of this news program or of this, you know, whatever. Or maybe could I skip, you know, whatever that show is tonight and take an hour and just turn off all the sound and sit here and read the scriptures and pray, or get the family together and talk about our life in the Lord. Just, there are so many things that are so simple. The song that I mentioned this morning has it right. It's take time to be holy. It doesn't happen. It doesn't just materialize. And the truth, and we know this so well, the important things never do. The most important things in our lives don't just happen. We have to make them the priority, and we have to continue after them. And today, I just hope as we look at this example of Jesus and see this, I mean, this is our Lord and Savior, and we see this in his life. What a blessing it is to look at how he lived, and then to take that and to make application to ourselves, solitude and service. And then we have the strength, we have the power, we have the focus, we have the energy, and we're in a spiritual place now after that to serve people, to tell them about the Lord, and to be faithful to our calling, to rescue the perishing, as we were singing a few minutes ago. Tonight, as we close the lesson, if there's anyone here has a spiritual need in your life too, that you're dealing with, and just in finding the time or in being a better servant and being more involved in ministry, maybe that's where you're falling short, or just want to rededicate yourself in some way, or struggling with finding time, if you need to speak with the elders this evening, have a need like that. If there's anyone here who's come tonight because you've come ready to be baptized into Christ and begin your life as a disciple, we would definitely encourage you to come and make that happen as well as you make your commitment to God. But if there are any who need to respond, please know that you can come now while we stand and while we sing.